Welcome once again to the Lime Leaf Podcast. This is a show about how to save the tech industry through open source, open standards, and worker ownership. We're your hosts, Blaine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Eric.
Ew.
And Mubs.
Good morning.
And me, John. The four of us own Lime Leaf, a member-owned tech co-op specializing in Rust and Go software development, as well as our own product development. And as a reminder on that, we're still working hard on apply.coop, which is our online job board for co-ops. We've been making a ton of progress. It's looking pretty amazing, if I can say that. I didn't do any of the coding, so, you know, something. Well, let's not be that generous. Anyway, so we're going to start by you soon. So if you're a co-op out there and you're interested in helping us build a platform that serves the cooperative community, visit apply.coop and sign up. So today we're dedicating this entire episode to our newest member. Welcome, Mubs.
Hello, everyone. Excited to be a part of the co-op now.
So I've not known you nearly as long as Eric and Blaine. So I guess what we wanted to do in this episode is just introduce you, talk about the history that you guys have together and then also your interests. I know you've built 850,000 products, so you can tell us all about that stuff. And then in our session that we like to call Explain It To Me, like I'm John, we're going to talk about app protocol, AT protocol. I've seen it referred to both ways. That's basically the protocol that Blue Sky is built on. And I don't know much about it, so especially you, Mubs, are going to explain it to me in a way that a child can understand.
I will try my best.
Okay. So to kick it off, if you just want to, tell us a bit about yourself, your background, what you've been doing for the last 30 years, just the basics.
Yeah. Well, I'll start a little bit further back than that, because I think people get a little bit confused with my accent. So I was actually born in a little village in the north of Pakistan. But my family moved to England when I was 4 years old. And so my formative years education, all of that stuff was actually spent in England. I started coding. My family got a computer when I was about 8 years old. So when I finished playing the video games that we had, only a few back then, because that's all there was back then.
Was that one of those BBC Sinclair things?
It's funny. I was talking about this the other day. We started with an Atari Pong machine was the first one that we had. Wow. Really, really going way back. But my first real computer was a Commodore C16. Moved up to a Commodore 64 from there, and then went back to Atari. So went back to an Atari ST at that point. Should have stuck with the Commodore line. I think the Amiga was very cool, and it would have been a fun one. But yeah, I started coding when I was 8 years old, just having fun with video games, copying code out of magazines and kind of editing stuff. Got pulled into that, really, really enjoyed writing code and kind of learning how to code. Ended up going to university for software engineering. So I do have a computer science degree with a specialization in software engineering. About a year after I graduated, got offered a job in California. The company I was working for in England said they were going to be moving their engineering efforts and centralizing them all out in San Fran. So at that point, I moved to America, and I've never been back. I've been back, but I've been here ever since. I'm now a U.S. citizen. Live here, work here, all of that fun stuff. More recently, so I went back and forth between startup world and agency world, and I'm kind of over the last 30 years, I've probably spent, about 8 or 9 years in startup world, then went to agency world, then went back to startup world, then went back to agency world, back to startup world, and now I'm kind of back in agency world, although a co-op is a special kind of agency, I like to think. Most recently I was at a fintech startup out in Austin, Was there for about 4 years, and now I've been kind of doing the freelance thing, and now I'm part of Limeleaf.
Cool. And we're happy that you're here. So I guess, Blaine, if you want to go first, your history with Mubs and what you guys have done together prior to
Yeah,
this.
I can't remember the timeline, so maybe you do, Mubs, but when I sort of first moved out to the area from Boston and sort of like put my roots out in New York, I started at a company called Mad Glory, which was an agency but more dedicated towards like staff augmenting and building, back-end platforms for game companies. And I think, Mubs, you were like two or three people after I joined, I believe, or right after me. I know Eric was basically the same week as me.
Yeah, we were within the same week. I think Mubs is very shortly there after, within like a month,
Yeah.
maybe.
I think, yeah, actually, I think officially I joined before you guys, but I didn't start
Yeah.
until after you guys, because I had to kind of work out where I was working. Yeah, I think officially Seth was the first employee in terms of being offered a position. I think I was second in terms of being offered a position, but I couldn't start immediately. I had to, I had to work out my notice at my at the agency I was at, and then so after you guys started, I think it was like the week afterwards that I started as well.
And then I don't know if we weren't on any specific project together actually the entire time. At least we may have worked for the same client, but we were always on separate teams, building different things. But I think we did sit across from each other like pretty frequently, though. We shared some things here and there. I think we may have been even on like different tech stacks for quite a while too. So I mean, that's sort of like my history there. And like we just spent all that time there. And then it was up until I think the Odd Networks spinoff sort of took, that's when we sort of diverged and went our separate ways, and then things changed. And then
And Odd Networks was an OTT platform, just so
Yeah,
everybody
Eric and
is
I
aware.
sort of went that direction while Mubs stayed at Mad Glory and did more of like the consulting agency work for the game companies. But we still like loosely like kept in touch over the years. But then, pandemic life happened, and everybody sort of like went in their own life. But and then it was up until like you reached out to. Or we bumped into you. I forget how we circled back to like get to this point. Like, did you?
Yeah, I think we touched base again at the startup events that happened in the area. Just kind of re yeah, and then we just kind of had a few. We met for drinks one night, I think, and just kind of had a chat just to kind of see kind of what everybody was up to and stuff like that. And yeah, just kind of stayed in touch since then. And I mean, I've always coming from Europe. I have slightly more. It might be, I don't want to get political, but slightly more socialist tendencies in terms of just unions and co-ops and kind of government managed healthcare and things like that. Like just been a part of that kind of world, just coming from Europe. And so the co-op format is not very popular here, at least not in the startup world, at least in terms of the software world. But it's all, but it's, but you know, it's always been of interest to me, just because I think it's an interesting way to run and a sort of organization. And so it was very interesting to hear kind of how you guys had kind of organized and kind of what you guys had planned for the future too. And obviously, it all sounded interesting, which is why I'm here.
Yeah, and actually, like, I don't know if you know this yet, but like a couple months ago, like we were floating around ideas of like, do we want to grow? Do we not? Like, just what does that look like? And yours was one of the names that sort of like floated across the board here and there. And this is before we even like met up with you, because we knew you were around and we knew what you were, who you were, and how you worked, and what you believed in, and all that kind of stuff. And so, I think it was one of like, if we had to expand, and if we were going to, he would be
Yeah,
it.
and so yeah, that's the other interesting part of my kind of history, I guess, is like obviously since I've been here, I've always had like a full-time job. I've always been working at a startup or an agency or something like that. But I've always loved working on side projects, as they're called. So in nights and weekends, my first side project, I think I built in 2000. And so over the last, 24 years, as kind of John alluded to, I've probably side project wise, not just like what I built during the day at work, there's probably over 100 of those, in terms of websites, web applications, kind of things like that. And not just on my own, like sometimes I work on my own, sometimes I work with other people, things like that. And so it really kicked off, I think, in about 2015, 2016, the Product Hunt world kind of started to exist and grow, and it suddenly gave everybody a venue to launch whatever they were working on. So 2015, 2016, 2017, I think I built like 20 or 30 side projects each year. Just like I said, either on my own or kind of with other people, just because it was really fun. And it solved a lot of like, what do you do when you finish a project, or when you get to the end of the version that you're working on? Prior to that, you were kind of launching into a void, because as somebody who's just working in nights and weekends, you don't have marketing, you don't have PR, you don't have to do all of those things. But Product Hunt kind of solved that, in that you kind of posted, I just launched this thing. And now suddenly thousands of people will come to your site and kind of see it, and without you really having to do anything. And so that really kicked off my kind of building side projects and kind of fighting into high gear. And that's usually how people know me. Most people don't know me from my work, because usually I've done work for pretty large organizations, even at agencies. I'm up to here with NDAs that, I can't talk about what I do. And so having these side projects gives me the opportunity to work on stuff and actually share publicly what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and why I'm working on stuff. And that, like I said, and then obviously to have at the end of that, have thousands of people come to your app is pretty amazing.
So give us like some examples of what some of those 100, just so people can get an idea of the kind of things you build.
Is it a habit or an addiction at this point?
I've been weaning off of it. Like I've been launching less, so maybe it was an addiction and now it's a habit. I don't know. But yeah, I've been a little bit more selective about what I'm working on, and kind of putting those out. But, yeah, I guess the one that probably has the most traffic, and probably people might have heard of it, might not have. I think in 2018, somebody I'd never met reached out to me from, he lives in Sofia in Bulgaria. Again, somebody nobody I've met before, nobody I've met since, nobody I've ever met in person, reached out and was like, I've got this idea. There was this report published by the University of Cambridge, I believe, which talked about AI and automation and things like that, and was like, they published this report, but at the end of the report there's this list of 800 jobs, and it in that table at the end, they basically tell you what the percentage likelihood of that job being automated away through AI or robotics or whatever it is. And so he was like, I'd love to turn that into a site where people can just come and log on, they can enter their job, and it will tell them what the percentage of likelihood is that their job will be automated away at some point in the future. And so I was like, that sounds cool. It sounds like fun. It sounds like a quick weekend side project that, we can just hammer out. And so rather than just taking that table, we kind of augmented it with some data from the Bureau of, Bureau of Labor and Statistics, I think. It just kind of tells you how many of those jobs are actually in the US economy, what their average salary is, kind of stuff like that. Yeah. And so over a couple of weekends, we built this thing, and it was called Will Robots Take My Job? It was literally, that was the URL that we chose. And so we kind of launched it, like it took us 2 weekends to build it, and it wasn't even like full weekends. We worked like a few hours each kind of weekend. It was probably an 8 to 10 hour project between us. I posted it on Hacker News that morning, and then somebody picked it up from Hacker News and put it on product hunt. And by the end of that first day, 1 million people had come to the website.
That's crazy.
It had, by the first week, it was up to like 10 million, I think, people had come to the website. Because once it got onto Hacker News and Product Hunt, it got picked up by MSN, Wired, like, it got picked up by the Associated Press, which meant that it got to like all of the local radio stations, all the local TV stations. And when we had launched it, there was a lot of interest about AI and automation and stuff like that. So we kind of managed to find the right time where people were really curious about, are jobs going to exist in the future, or will machines just do everything for us?
Right.
We're still trying to figure that out, I think. But yeah, so in that one, we kind of ran that for about 6 months. We were like, we didn't know this was going to be popular. Like, we didn't know. There was no plan for this website. It was just meant to be like a fun little thing to work on. So we kind of maintained it for about, I think, 6 months, maybe about 9 months out. We were like, we should probably sell this while there's still some traffic. It was still doing about 300,000 visits a month, from the SEO, from the backlinks and things like that. So it was making, you know, a few hundred bucks a month from ads and sort of stuff like that. And so, yeah, so we ended up selling that. But yeah, I think by the time we sold it, I think it had something like 15 million people come to it. Wow. And we were like, yeah, it's great, but like no real long-term plan for it or anything like that. So that was probably the one that had like the most just kind of exploded out of nowhere. Really more serious stuff. So like the fintech startup that I was at previously, the one I have, Austin, actually started as a nights and weekends project as well. I was hired to build it in my spare time. We built the first version of it just as a fun nights and weekends side project. Actually, the first thing that we built was actually called Operation Pi. It was meant to be like a fun play on like how much of the company would you keep if you took on investment rounds and kind of things like that. It's kind that was a kind of Operation Pi. How much would the pie be worth and how much would you own, kind of essentially as well. So that started a weekend side project, worked on that probably for about 6 months as just kind of paid to do in kind of weekends and evenings. And then that became my full-time job for a good 3 years after that as well. The other one that had a similar trajectory as well, so this is going back a lot further, I think going back to like 2014, I think. I had a couple of friends from England who wanted to build a content suggestion tool for social media, actually. And so I built the MVP for them. I was like the technical person. Matt was more of like the business marketing person, and then Dan handled a lot of the UI stuff. That was called Q3U's. So they went out and raised money, and the company still exists. I believe there's 8 people working there still. We've launched a few different things over the years where you add new features, add new functionality, kind of thing as well. So yeah, there's been a lot of them over the years, and more recently things like Blue Sky.
Well, yeah, that's directory. What I wanted to get into next. Yeah. So one of the things among the many things we're excited about with you joining us is you have brought a product with you called Blue Sky Directory. And maybe this will be our good segue into AT at protocol, whatever. So if you just explain a little bit about what Blue Sky Directory is and how that came about.
Yeah. So Blue Sky, from the name, is, you know, I try and be a little bit obvious if that's not apparent from other projects. It helps from an SEO perspective. That's kind of why I like it. But yeah, Blue Sky Directory was originally, the idea was just to build a manually curated directory of applications, alternative clients, or the different elements of Blue Sky and the app protocol, which we can get into the specifics in a little while, but was just meant to be a manually curated directory of these things that if you use Blue Sky, you might not want to use the official Blue Sky client, for example. There's a number of alternative clients that you can use on different platforms on the web and, you know, things like that. But finding them was a little bit tough. And so I curated that list manually. And the idea was just to publish that information so that other people wouldn't have to do the same work that I did. It morphed a little bit once it launched because obviously the core part of Blue Sky is that everybody gets access to the fire hose of everything, of all the content and all of the stuff that's posted to that particular social network. You can connect to the fire hose and kind of analyze what's posted and do whatever you want with it, but do what would be helpful with it. Right. And so it morphed into something much larger and much more comprehensive than what I had originally planned. It was also I launched it around the time of the election in the US here last year. And at that point, there's about 13 million people using Blue Sky. And again, through sheer luck, there was a lot of interest in Blue Sky after the election as people left the other social media platforms and were looking for a new home. I think they just passed 35 million users now. So in the last 6 to 8 months, they've grown 120% in terms of the number of active users that they have. And so that's just led to a lot of interest in the Blue Sky directory as well, as people try to figure out how to use the platform and find other ways to kind of engage with people as well.
So if you want to find us on Blue Sky, we're at LimeLeaf Co-op or at LimeLeaf.coop. Sorry. Blue Sky, the social network, started as a kind of side project back when a guy named Jack Dorsey still owned Twitter. And so the idea, as I understand it, and this is where we segue into you guys explaining to me what it actually is instead of just my very vague idea, is, you know, essentially it was going to be an open protocol that would unite all social networks everywhere. It would be the lingua franca, the HTTP of social networks. And then so that's my understanding of how it started. Is that correct?
It's pretty close. Yeah. I mean, essentially, it was essentially a research project inside of Twitter as an experiment to what would the next version of Twitter look like. But part of the core tenet was this idea of federation, in that it shouldn't be just Twitter anymore. Like the protocol itself was, as you said, was meant to be a industry standard. Anybody could implement the protocol, and then so there's the opportunity that anybody running on the protocol can communicate with each other, just like, you know, email. Everybody runs their own SMTP server, everybody runs their own POP servers, but all the servers are able to talk to each other because they all use the same protocol, essentially. And the same with the web. Obviously, there's millions of web servers, but you know how to reach them because they all implement the same protocol. So originally it started off with this idea of what is the future of Twitter? What does the future of social media look like? And it was kind of a research project inside of Twitter, funded by Twitter. And it got pretty far. I think they basically said, here's $1 million follows to this research project. You go hire a team, figure out what the future of social media might look like from an infrastructure standpoint.
And then it spun out into what is now Blue Sky, the public service corporation. They're not a co-op.
It's a public benefit corporation.
Public benefit.
It's basically still a corporation is still supposed to make a profit, but much like I think Kickstarter was the first like big tech company that started as what they call a corporation is kind of what the sort of standard kind of terminology is. So you're still supposed to run as a company. You're still supposed to make a profit, but profit isn't your only motivation. And so sometimes you're okay with taking making slightly less profit, but doing good in the world instead. And so that was the idea behind Kickstarter, because people were always concerned about Kickstarter. If I'm going to go and raise money on Kickstarter, if Kickstarter's main purpose is to make money, if their only reason to exist is to make money, you know, what are the projects that they're going to try and get on the platform, and which are the platforms they're going to try and promote in terms of, the ones that are going to make the most money, because that's kind of, kind of the way that the capitalist world works. But as a B Corp, you don't necessarily have to do that. Yes, you still want to build a healthy organization that's going to exist for years and years and years, but you're trying to promote the things that will add value to society as well. And so if you're making slightly less money, but you're doing good in the world, that's also important. And I think it's the same with Blue Sky here with social networks. You know, part of the problem that we had in the past with social networks is at some point they grow to a certain amount of scale, and then it's like, how do we make money from all the activity that we have? And then you end up doing dubious things because you have to make money. And that's your main purpose, is to exist to kind of make money. And so you end up doing things that some people don't like, because it's all about making profits.
Yep. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because, you know, as we know, OpenAI is a, quote, non-profit something or other. And now it's obviously going to be spun out into a public corporation or something, because there's the belief is there's just so much money that can be made from that. I mean, the fact that they literally light money on fire every time, like they're not making any money at all. So I don't know. All right. So there's a protocol that so Blue Sky is a implementation of at protocol, basically. It's rides on top of it. So I guess what are some other, well, first of all, so as a protocol, like, what are some of the features of it? So how is it different from, say, Mastodon or...
Yes.
You know.
So I, like I said, one of the core tenets is this whole idea of federation, in that the servers can talk to each other and share information, which you can do with kind of Mastodon as well. But one of the core principles that they added to Blue Sky was this idea of, like, your portability of your account. So they have this thing called PDSs in the protocol, and that's a personal data server, I think is what that stands for. And the idea is that I can make my account on any PDS. So Blue Sky has its set of PDSs, and I can register for an account. And so I can be habashirikbal.bsky.social. That's what my account would be. But at some point, if I wanted to, I could, so actually, as you mentioned earlier, like, it's your handle on Blue Sky, or our handle, I have to remember to say that now, is limeleaf.coop is the handle that that you have. That I, for example, am habashirikbal.com. So you can link your domain to your account, and that becomes your handle. And so that's one that gives you a sense of verification, because now, do people know that it's me? Well, it's my handle, so it's my domain, so they would know that that's me as well. But two, it does also open up the possibility I can run my own PDS, and I can move my account from the Blue Sky PDS and run it on my own server instead. So I now control and own all my posts, all my content, and they're housed on my server. Now, that PDS can federate with all of the other PDSs as well. So when I make a post, that gets pushed out to the Blue Sky PDS and anybody else who's running a PDS as well. So so there's lots of... That opens up a lot of different opportunities and removes some of the things that...
So if I'm on a...
Yep.
So if I'm on a PDS and I accumulate 6 million followers and, you know, 15,000 posts and DMs and everything else, and then along comes some, I mean, this is just a hypothetical, I don't know if this would ever happen, but some billionaire comes along and buys the PDS that I'm on, and I don't like that person. So then I can just move all that data to some other PDS. There'd be no interruption of service. You're just sort of like, goodbye. I don't want anything to do with your PDS anymore.
Yeah, as long as
I'm going to start my own.
As long as you're not on a bluesky.social, right? Because that's the handles that are associated with that particular PDS. So you can't take that account somewhere else. But if you if you applied, you know, if you've linked a separate domain, for example. Okay. You can then carry that. I mean, your account, I believe, I don't know the exact ins and outs of all the protocol, because effectively there's a unique ID that's associated with your account, right? Like your handle is just a pointer to that kind of account ID. In theory, you could move your account. But your handle might change if you moved it to a different PDS. So I don't know exactly how that would work. But if your handle is your domain, you can take that with you to your PDS as well. So that's the right way to do it, I think, is just like if you decided that you wanted to move, you would kind of link your domain with that, so that domain will be linked with that particular ID that sort of with your account, and then when you moved it to the new PDS, then everything stays the same. The handle is still the same, the ID is still the same, but it's now homed at a different PDS. And yes, so that's the idea. If Blue Sky starts doing weird stuff on their PDS, if they start blocking banning a bunch of accounts, if they start doing things that you don't agree with, the idea is that you can take all your content, all your social graph, and I mean, it's going to be a little weird if just one person moves, but the idea is that everybody can move, right? Like, you can all move to a new PDS. Or you can move to your own and kind of federate with each other as well. That's the other option as well. But but that's been the problem with social media in the past, is that you spend all this time building up your social graph, your content, but you're kind of locked in. Like if Twitter starts doing, or X starts doing weird things, which they have been for a while, you don't really have a choice. You're kind of stuck there. Right. If you want to go to a new social network, you want to go to a new service, you basically have to start from scratch again and build up your following.
Yeah, and that's what. A lot of people who have problems with Twitter, X, whatever it's, you know, they're like, well, I'd love to move, but I have 5 million people that feel like I've built that audience over the last 10 years. Like, I'm going to move to Blue Sky and start from scratch. You know, there are some people that have done it successfully, like Paul Krugman is, I think, a good example, and George Takei. There's people that have done it and are in the process of doing it. But yeah, it's a really tough thing to tell somebody, like, well, because the person who owns that platform's a jerk, you shouldn't be on it. It's like, well, I'd love to not be, but how am I going to rebuild this audience?
Some people make their living on it, right? Like in terms of that stuff. And so, and to have to cut that off would be really, really hard. And yes, some people would like to move, but then, you know, there's like penalties that Twitter and X can put on you so that you don't have as much reach and things like that as well. So, I mean, longer term, I think I think a few people have said it, like, this is the last time I have to build my social graph, assuming that the app protocol takes hold and other people start implementing on it and things like that. It essentially means that anytime a new application comes around, you don't have to start from scratch. You can build on the social parts of it in terms of who's following you and who you're following and all that stuff. And even if it's a new application, the sort of layers that power it underneath are all still the same. So your social graph will come with you, even if it's not Blue Sky. I think that's the interesting thing, is Blue Sky essentially will become the foundation that's in charge of maintaining the protocol, and there'll be a bunch of other PDSs, a bunch of other services that run on top of that you actually use every day, without realizing that you're even using app protocol in some cases. Like, most people don't care technically underneath how X works or Instagram works or any of that kind of stuff. All they care about is that they see the posts and they see the images that they want to see. But the fact that they can go from one app to another app and still be following the same people and still be interacting with the same people, I think, is a really interesting aspect of all of this stuff.
Yeah, it kind of gets back. Oh, go ahead, Blaine.
Yeah. Yeah, and it shares a lot of that stuff with, like, the ActivityPub side of the world, too. Like, that's the other top player there as
so
well.
So just give us a little 5-second summary what ActivityPub is.
It's basically app protocol that it's app protocol. It's like another implementation over HTTP, and it sort of powers Mastodon, PixelFed, Loops, you know, all that kind of stuff. It does sort of share a lot of that in that same vein. But, you know, Mubs and I had that conversation, like, why are folks having a struggle on Mastodon while they're not struggling on Blue Sky? And we, you know, sort of generally came to the conclusion that, like, Blue Sky just knocked it out of the park with marketing and onboarding. Like, they just did it way better. And it's easier for the less technical folks to just jump on. I mean, the UI for Blue Sky looks like Twitter. It's the same. Yep. It's the exact same. Whereas if you went from Twitter to Mastodon before Blue Sky existed, it was not the same. Like, it just felt completely foreign. I think both of these have a world in there. But it's interesting to see like what are the challenges that Blue Sky is going to tackle with that protocol, with sort of like the less technical folks that just want a social graph and like want a social network to use that to their advantage.
Yeah. And it seems to get back to just the core of what social networks used to be. I mean, now it's all tied up in all kinds of political stuff in it. But, you know, when these things started, it was I just want to share pictures of my kids with people I went to high school with.
which is oddly strange, right? So one could probably argue that there was the social network that has existed for a very long time. Is your phone number. You have a phone number that you can share around with your people. You know, you're not following, you're not like posting and people are subscribing to those. But you can send photos to other people that you've followed and like connected with through contacts. But if I'm on Verizon and I'm like, screw Verizon, I hate them, I'm going to move over to T-Mobile, I can take my phone number and move it over. And I don't lose my social graph.
Well, Mubs and I are old enough, you and Eric, you young people, too young to remember this, but there was a time in this country when you could not do that, and it was extremely controversial and took a long time to fight the government and the big telco companies to allow you to do that. Like, it was insane. You'd have a mobile phone, and you'd be like, I'm moving, you know, to wherever, and I want to switch to Sprint. Yeah. It's like, well, you need to get an entirely new phone number. Yeah. It's like... What? It was so crazy.
Yeah. I think that's...
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, I think that's the thing that clicked for me, because I had heard about Blue Sky and was sort of keeping it at a distance, and in the meantime had built up another social graph in Mastodon, on Fostodon for myself. But when I talked to Mubs like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, or last week maybe, and explained like, oh no, you keep your ID. And then that is the thing that gets used in all of the app proto stuff. I'm like, man, like, why didn't they do that with ActivityPub? Because, you know, if you sign up for Fostodon or Mastodon.social, those are separate accounts. And then if you run your own, that's another separate account. And you can sort of like import, export, depending on, you know, the different protocols, whether it's like Mastodon or there's like GoToSocial is another one that's like, it's sort of the same Mastodon API, but written in Go. And then there's like Friendica. And there's a bunch of different ones, but they're all sort of similar. Some have more features than others. But yeah, they're all completely separate accounts. So, you know, you can't just already be following the same folks on one versus the other. Yeah. So yeah, that was my unfortunate realization last week. Was like, oh man, I had to do this again.
Yeah, I think the one thing I think when this, you know, when the app protocol kind of experiment started, they did look at PubSub and Activity Hub and all of those kind of things and said, can we just use these? These are already published standards. They've been out there for years and years and years. And they looked at them and said, there's a few edges here that aren't going to work long term, right? Like one of the problems that people have with the PubSub hierarchy and stuff is scaling. Like, how do you get to millions and millions of users? How do you get to hundreds of millions of users, which hopefully at some point the people running on Appurica will get to? And scaling individual servers and having people be responsible for kind of scaling individual servers and things like that. With the PDS, for example, I don't have to store everybody else's activity. If I run my own PDS, right, I just store my own. And so the power of how much horsepower do I need? How much bandwidth do I need? Pretty small, because it's only the things that I'm interacting with. That's the only bits of the database that I need to store on my local PDS. I don't have to store the records of all 35 million people. Right. And things like that. So they looked at what was on the market already and said, can we make that work? And they said, short term, we probably could. It could probably work short term. But as you start to build out the protocol, as you start to build out the active user base, where the edge is going to be. And this was partly because they were coming from inside of Twitter, which had 300 million, 350 million active accounts already. So they couldn't think in the short term. Yes, they could evaluate things from a short term perspective, but they were building a protocol that was going to work long term for hundreds of millions of active accounts. And I think with sites like Mastodon, I think from a technical perspective they're really awesome, but they haven't really thought about scale to the degree that the guys at App Protocol and TwitterNX had to kind of think about as well.
Yeah, and they might not even want to. Yeah, and I think even socially, as humans, I don't need 1,000 people in my life, like whatsoever. Right. So it's while there are sort of called like social networks, like the human person like can't hold that amount of relationships in their brain and actually like gain value out of that. So it's sort of like different there. So maybe there is sort of like a tipping point where ActivityPub is sort of more meant for, you know, global scale kind of interactions with people, and then ActivityPub and Mastodon and all those sort of like variations, sort of like I think of them as like little small co-ops or communities or communes or like local instances, like your towns and your local governments and things like that, as their outlets. Like it'll be interesting to see like where these things show to shift. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how App Proto is sort of solving the account problem, right? Like I get that from what Eric explained, like moving and shifting and like you have all these accounts everywhere. You know, it's hard to federate an identity. Like, how do you really, really federate yourself? Like when you really should be only one instance somewhere, like that has to live somewhere centrally, because I'm a person, I can't be in two different places. So why does my digital identity is going to be relatively the same, since we sort of associate that digital identity with ourselves in the real world? So we don't want that copied everywhere. We want control of that. That's what we want. What we want the control of. So yeah.
So if my if my PDS. All right, my PDS has all my posts. Mm-hmm. It also has all my replies.
Yeah, all. Yeah, I think they have what they call.
So it's the original a car, post I think, is called. Kind of...
Yeah. So all the posts, all the replies, all the likes, all the follows, all of that stuff is stored in your personal archive. And so each account essentially has its own archive within the PDS.
Okay.
And so all of those records that you create, that you engage with other accounts, make content, all of those records get stored on your inside of your personal archive, inside of PDS. Now the PDS can share those with other PDSs. So if somebody wants to have a full sync of everybody's accounts, they can.
Okay.
But you obviously, if you run your own PDS, it's up to you what you sync and what you choose not to sync. Obviously, there's some stuff that you have to sync, otherwise you're not part of the Federation, right? Like, if you don't exist, then you have, there's certain amounts of things that you have to sync of your own information. If you run your own PDS, you can choose what records of other accounts you want to sync in, and things
so,
like that.
Okay, because what I'm trying to think through, I know that one of the like criticisms of Mastodon Activity Pub, whatever, is like there has to be a copy of this stuff. Like if you post a video, it's got to be like copied to other servers and stuff, and that becomes, again, not very scalable. So if I'm, let's say I'm hosting my own PDS, and all my posts, replies, videos, or whatever are on there, and I screw up my DNS records or the server blows up and it goes offline. Like, what happens?
So the records, so the actual posts and stuff, so the content of an actual like tweet or whatever you want to say, that is stored stored inside your archive. But that's when you post it onto the network, when you share it with everybody else, the PDSs that are syncing will take copy of that actual record, and that will be, you know, so it's effectively Blue Sky's PDS will have that as well. But yours is still like the authoritative source, right? So if somebody wants to delete it or edit it or whatever, that PDS won't allow it because it knows it's not the original source of that particular piece of content. It's yours, right? But things like media, though, I think I treat it a little bit differently. There's an option. So yours
would have to be
right. Yeah. So things like video and images and things like that are stored on your PDS, and other PDSs can choose the, you know, obviously when they see the reference to it in the post, like there's a video that I posted, here's an image that I posted, they can choose to take a copy of it and host it as well. So that, you know, so that everybody doesn't have to go back to your PDS for it, and they can expose it through different views in the app protocol stack. So it's up to the PDS if they want to have a copy of the associated media and stuff like that, or if they just want to reference it back from however you want to make it available to everybody else. And obviously, obviously you can post it elsewhere as well. If it's a video, you can post it on YouTube and things like that too, right? So there's lots of different options there as well in terms of that, how that hosting works. But it's all configurable, which is obviously nice, because if you run your own PDS, it's up to you whether you want a full copy of the entire network with the content, with the images, you know, with all media, or you just want to run a PDS, but I just want my own stuff. So there's lots of options there. And look, I mean, honestly, like, not a lot of people are running their own PDSs at this point. I think there's...
Well, no, that's another problem with Mastodon, right? Is people are like, well, I started my own server, and now all of a sudden it's costing me $1,200 a month. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, I think they...
And that's where the...
They solved it through relays, I think they call them.
Right.
Essentially. Okay. So, like, there's a relay server somewhere. And I'm still not clear exactly like how that works, but those are the aggregators of all the various PDS servers out there. And so like your PDS doesn't have to, like, if you follow a bunch of people from all different PDSs, it's not like, it's not like your PDS has to have all of that information. It only has like, I think it only has that, like, you follow those things, but doesn't have all the content. And then if you're using, say, an iOS app or an Android app to like view all of that content, you're actually hitting, like, you're going through relays to get all that content from all the various. So you're going through like aggregation servers of sorts. So it's sort of, in a way.
I was just going to say, it's like, I'm trying to think through if there's like a product opportunity to have some kind of app protocol or PDS CDN network, or I don't know, something that puts a cache layer on all this stuff.
Somehow. Yeah, it's
tough with social networks because it happens instantaneously. It's very hard to, you know, cache stuff, ephemeral stuff like that.
They say anyone can host a relay too. Yeah. So that's separate from a PDS. It's, I guess,
okay,
there's some benevolent folks or companies that,
sure,
obviously Blue Sky is probably one of them that runs relays all throughout the world.
Yeah, and that's, yep.
Well, plus,
and it always comes back to this.
And,
oh, go ahead, Mark.
No, I was saying, plus, I think there is some value to understanding what's happening in the entire network. So running a relay gives you that option, it gives you that ability to be in the middle of everything. So you can kind of, it gives you certain access to certain information about what's happening on the network itself. So I think, yes, there's a benevolency in terms of kind of running these things, but also gives you insights and which you can use for whatever you want to use them for as well. So some people do it because it's the good thing to do, but other people do it because there's an opportunity there as well.
There's also the aspect of, like, you can choose what your relay ingests, right? Yep. So you can have slices of the network. So you can say, allow list and block list, various different PDSs out there, it seems.
Yeah, or if there's just specific kinds of content as well, you can subscribe to just specific kinds of messages. If you don't want to see the actual post, but you just want to relay the people who are following, who's following who, and things like that as well. I think that, again, it's all about being able to build a healthy network based on the things that people engage with it are. I think one of the other things, that is, I guess, just to kind of circle around a little bit in terms of, like, the features of what makes the app protocol and Blue Sky different from some of the other offerings that are out there now, is, like, one of the things that I think I got pissed off with a long time ago, long before I moved off of X, even though I still have my account there, was this idea about, like, the sort of home feed and like the feed that we see. Like, I was always a chronological guy. Like, I just want to see the post from the 500 or so people that I'm following. I want to see them in the chronological order. And
stop,
that's it.
Stop telling me what I think is interesting.
Right. I follow these people because I want to see their posts, right? Like, so just show me them, because that's what I wanted. But then they started doing this algorithmic thing where it's like, well, we're going to tell you based on things that you did before, these are the posts that we think you should see. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to see things the way that I want to see things. And what one of the features of the app protocol is that it allows anybody to run their own feed. And so we're not tied to X's version of what my feed is supposed to be now. Like, I can write my own feed. Yeah. I can subscribe to anybody else's feed on anything. And so part of the core of the app protocol is to give users the ability to customize the experience that they want. So if I want just the following feed in the reverse chronicle, I can have that. If I want to use the home feed that Blue Sky offers, I can subscribe to that, and it's just in my client just the way that it's supposed to be. Or I can write my own feed and say, I'm interested in this particular topic. I want only the post about this topic in my feed, or I only want the content from these people about this topic in my feed. And that feed is available. That's the stuff that I think is super interesting from a long-term perspective, because it allows you to build an experience around the client that is really specific to you.
It's all very interesting. And we're sort of coming up on time, but I just wanted to just sort of close this out with the fact that, like, you know, we intend to do things with blueskydirectory.com as well as other AT protocol related stuff. So look for in the future product stuff coming out of LimeLeaf related to this, because, I mean, you know, Blue Sky Directory gets a decent amount of traffic, and that, the thinking is, could be our springboard to other, you know, app protocol related products or services, or, you know.
I have an idea already.
Don't say it. We don't want to steal it.
I'm not gonna say it. You gotta come back.
I do have one last question. Is it, and Mubs, you can be the definitive person on this. Is it at or AT?
That's a good question. I mean, I've heard it different ways as well, but I think I prefer AT.
So also, I guess then they're AT-ATs, not AT-ATs in Star Wars.
Oh man. Oh boy. Oh man.
I'm just gonna say, I think, yeah, just as we're wrapping this up, I think it's also interesting, just from a co-op perspective, I think it's gonna be interesting to see how people evolve their use of social media in the future as well. Partly because of things like Mastodon and AT, in terms of how people build followings and kind of build their communities online as well. I think part of what's really interesting to me is getting access to the social graph, which at the beginning of Twitter we used to do because the API was open and people were, Twitter was very happy to have people build on top of their APIs because it was helping them grow and kind of get reach as well. With AT, it's all open as well. So everything, because you can sync to a PDF and you can, it's all open, all the information is open. So it's going to be interesting to see what suite of tools, what suite of applications are built on top of AT. Many things that nobody's even thought of kind of at this point. But I think the future, I think the sort of opportunities and the things that we can do are going to be really interesting as it becomes more popular as well.
Well, I think another aspect of it for us and co-ops and, socialist commies like us is like the economics of it is it would be really interesting to figure out a way to do this so that you don't have to have $100 million to run a social network. Like there's an economic sort of equality aspect to all this. It's like, well, and this is again what a lot of people I think have run into, my understanding anyway, with Mastodon is it's like, well, we'd love to have this server that, is not federated with creeps and weirdos, but it's going to cost $5,000 a day to run the fucking thing. So that's just not. Whereas if you're VC, private equity, be like, sure, I'll, we'll. In other words, how do you prevent just yet more billionaires from taking this over?
And I think that's the biggest question mark over this whole thing for me is how is this going to fund itself, right? Like at this point, Blue Sky's raised, what is it, like 20 million already to kind of build out what they have so far. At some point, that needs to stop. At some point, it needs to be able to support itself, and whether that's people paying to use it or if that's people, I essentially, I hope it's not ads, right? Like, I don't want ads thrown in everywhere because it changes how people interact with things. It changes how people prioritize things based on we want to show you as many ads as we can so we can make more money.
No, it automatically creates a race to the bottom.
Right.
Every ad-supported thing ends up being just to completely and shitify almost
and
immediately.
they've
That's
and they've
just one person's
no
opinion.
and the CEO of Blue Sky has said that they want to that she wants to avoid that, but until they actually have a different revenue model and it works, we're not going to know if it works. So like this could all just end poorly as well. Luckily, even if it does end poorly, there's because everything is open source, everything is available, like hooking it and running a new version of this stuff becomes much easier than what happened with X and sort of all that stuff.
Cool. Awesome. Well, on that note, Mubs, Blaine, Eric, this has been super interesting. And I'm sure in the future we'll be talking more about AT stuff because I mean it's one of the things that I'm most excited about you joining us is and because it's so nascent, like it's just really getting started. I mean, by social media network standards, 30 million people is not quote a lot, which is crazy. Anyway, all right. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. We'll have links in the show notes for things we mentioned in the episode. If you want to get in touch with us, we are on Blue Sky, limeleaf.coop. We're also on Mastodon. We're on Open Collective. All these links are on the website at limeleaf.coop. If you want to give us some money, we're always willing to take it. You can make a donation on Open Collective. Just go to opencollective.com/limeleaf, or again, you can go to our website. All these links are there. So we are a worker-owned cooperative. If you're interested in starting your own tech co-op, there's a website called start.coop, start.coop, which is a great place to start on your co-op journey. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Guys, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you all next month.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
See you guys.